Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing, and I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. It's Thursday here in the DMV. We are moving closer to the NFL draft later next month, but we are right on the doorstep of the start of free agency. The legal tampering period, such a funny term, opens up Monday at noon. And obviously, when you have the Commanders, a team with the most salary cap space in the league, around $80 million, and holes all over the lineup, you can imagine they're going to do a lot of moves, and they may jump out right off the bat and get going. So we will see what they do. But we talked a lot about free agency today with our guest, Brad Spielberger from Pro Football Focus. Got into some potential names higher up on your various free agent lists that perhaps Washington could be in play for. Discuss running backs, quarterbacks, tight ends, offensive line. We also, of course, discussed Washington's own free agents. What is Brad, his view of the marketplace for Cam Curl, Kendall Fuller, and others. So a lot to get into. Excited for you guys to hear this conversation in a moment here on the Standing Room Only podcast. Of course, make sure you subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere you do your podcasting. And of course, if you haven't had a chance to listen yet, you got some time over the weekend. A couple of podcasts focus on the draft. Ted Wynn, our film analyst, gave his view of Jaden Daniels versus Drake May. Mike Smelt, my colleague at The Athletic and a Commanders fan, we went through like fake trades to figure out, is it make sense for Washington to acquire a second first-round pick? And then earlier in the week, Nick Baumgartner, one of our draft analysts, joined me from the Combine to break down this 2024 draft class. In addition, of course, make sure you check out my work on The Athletic. My first mock draft went up on Thursday, and I will have maybe up over the weekend, but I'll have my free agency primer with a lot of names for you to consider. I always try to I don't like just doing the pull up a list and then just pull some names off. Sometimes you have no choice because it's not like you can study every guy in the league per se. But that said, hopefully we'll give you guys some insight into what Washington may be looking to do. So check out for that over the weekend. And if you have yet to subscribe, you can do so. The Athletic right now, $1 a month for 1 year. Just click on one of my articles and you can get in The Athletic. Don't have a ton to get to here at the top. Brad and I went for a little bit, so I want to get to that. You know, like I said, I think Washington could get moving pretty quickly on Monday just based on the fact that they have a lot of moves to make. It doesn't mean that they will necessarily spend big on any individual player, but in terms of just starting to bring guys in, you know, that seems like a reasonable thing to consider. And I want to be clear on one thing. Obviously, we all were, collectively fairly critical of Ron Rivera for the whole Commanders situation. Right off the bat, brought over a ton of coaches, but also a bunch of players. And over the next few years, it just felt like anytime something, they needed somebody new for whatever the reason, that they just would reach out to people from Carolina. And the issue wasn't so much having people that you're familiar with. That's frankly a good thing. It helps the coaching staff have some comfort in at least some pieces of their roster because they're learning everybody else. These players, if you get the right ones, can help set the tone for everybody else, help explain what it is a coach is looking for. It's just that when Rivera did it, it was coming off a team that had a few poor seasons in a row. He ended up getting fired and just put the band back together, especially coaching staff, but some players as well. And here, look, Dan Quinn is going to probably have some people that he's familiar with. We already saw Zach Ertz signed, who he was with Cliff Kingsbury in Arizona. You would imagine Adam Peters has some guys from the 49ers he'd be interested in, and on we go. So I want to make sure whatever is going to be said here this episode or going forward, not being hypocritical by saying it's probably a reasonable thing to bring in players that, you know, these coaches know. I'm just saying we'll see if they go overboard to, and to what degree. In any event, and by the way, speaking of the quarterbacks, you know, look, everybody has their opinions and their lists, but, you know, as I said, I ended up going with Jaden Daniels. It has just felt to me, as I'm trying to read the room, that the Drake May backers don't seem to be particularly, the way I'm listening to them, don't seem to be particularly moved by him. It's just more of he looks the part. And look, obviously, he's got a lot of talent, not questioning that. But there seems to be more passion with Jaden Daniels and more people inside football, from what I can tell, seem to be kind of leaning more in his way. So I bring this up because Chris Sims, of course, former quarterback and NBC Sports analyst, he's, you know, not afraid to share his opinions on these players in these drafts. He's not afraid to, you know, go against the grain at times. Now, he put out his top six quarterbacks. Number one, Caleb Williams. Number two, Jaden Daniels. They're each on their own tier. But in the third tier, he's got Bo Nix, Michael Penix, and J.J. McCarthy, meaning Drake May, he's got sixth. So, I don't know. I just find that interesting. Again, it's only one person's opinion, but in context with, or in conjunction, I should say, with other people I've talked to, you know, we had Randy Mueller on here a couple weeks ago questioning the hype for Drake May and so on. So just interesting to note. It doesn't mean anything. Only at the moment it matters what the Commanders think at number two if they hold that pick, and we won't know that answer presumably for a little bit. All right, here we go. Brad Spielberger at PFF_Brad. is his Twitter handle. So let's discuss the NFL free agency with Brad Spielberger here on the Standard Room Only podcast.
All right. I always, you know, we'll refer to somebody as a returning champion if they come back more than once, but this guy, like, you know, he may have the belt here at some point because he's definitely been on a ton of times and no better time to have him on right now with free agency. We have to start Brad Spielberger, salary cap guru, football thinker for Pro Football Focus, who another person I saw a few times out at the combine. I legitimately am still recovering a little bit. I'm not gonna lie, my head is still swimming. I didn't even like party or anything per se. It was just a lot of work. This, you're on all the time. You're on the whole day. I get up at 7 after going to bed at 3 because the players start talking at like 8. It was a lot. But how did you survive?
It is a lot. It is a lot. Yeah, it's like you said. It's funny. I think I maybe recovered like as of today, but it's not even that like we're going out crazy partying. I mean, I was out like one of the nights until 3:30 in the morning, but it's not like I'm like drinking heavily. I'm like just trying to have conversations and network and talk to people. You know, a barley pop may be in hand, but it's not like we're there to like get hammered. Because like you said, you then turn around and have podiums at 8 and 9 a.m. But yeah, no, we're back. We're recovered. And, you know, for me, it's this weekend and heading into next Monday and Wednesday will be just as crazy. So,
well, right before we started recording, I was saying to you, like, dude, like, it is an insane how many free agents have just popped up over the last, you know, this week, really. And, you know, the Buffalo Bills alone, I think, cut, you know, 30 people of note. And a lot of safeties are out there, and you were, you know, part of your duties is, you know, figuring out free agent lists, rankings, projections, and, you know, it's just so many different names out there. We just sort of mentioned this to each other, but like, it does feel like there's been an inordinate amount of notable players getting cut at this point, or am I just, this is what happens every year and I'm just misremembering?
You're actually the second person to ask me this today. I think it's pretty standard. You know, there's been a couple, like, Justin Simmons, maybe to a degree, is a bit of a surprise. Was still playing good football, but nah, it's a bunch of, you know, 30-plus-year-old guys that safety, linebacker, interior offensive line. Like, it's kind of, this sadly is kind of the way of the world. This week before free agency, this is kind of how it always goes.
Right. Well, Washington was kind enough to make a couple of their moves last week, although they did it as I was literally going to the airport in Indy to come home and then at the airport. So that was less convenient, but they already made their move. So I guess in my head that I was like, well, not that it's over, but okay, we kind of went through some of that. All right. So I want to go through free agents with you, obviously, and get your lay of the land feel as this thing kicks off Monday. What time is it for the illegal tampering period? Is it noon? Give or
The
take?
illegal tampering period, I think it is noon on Monday, I believe. Yeah.
Okay. So let's just start with some of the Washington guys. Look, at this point, they have not re-signed any of their players, 20 something odd free agents, and the new staff, they have, for the most part, no ties to these guys. They didn't draft them, they didn't sign them, what have you. So there's no real expectation that you're gonna bring back people as if they were your own. But that said, they have to fill out a roster. They need bodies. Cam Curl, he is typically at the top of Washington's list. A very fascinating guy, I find. Look, he's a talented player. Did a lot of good things. Came in as a rookie, as a seventh round pick. It quickly turned into a starter. Kept that role for 4 years. Was just a steady good player at a unit that they didn't always get steady good play. That said, zero interceptions the last 3 years. In talking to some people around the league, after once they got a hold of his film and were looking at it in the context of free agency, didn't not did, I didn't get rave reviews from these people. Now, again, it's only a few people. It just takes one or two teams in the league to fall in love and he'll get paid. But I don't know. I'm kind of very curious to see what his number is, on top of the fact that just in this last few days, a ton of safeties entered the market. Xavier McKinney not getting tagged, Justin Simmons getting released, Diggs, another one. So where are you at right now on Cam Curl as we head into the Monday where free agency starts?
Yeah, this is a position that always tends to struggle, in free agency, unless you're the tippy top. Antoine Winfield gets the franchise tag, for example. He might, I think, probably will reset the market at safety, but below that, it gets tough. And you have really, really good players that still take, mid-rate deals if they hit the market. I have Cam Curl right now at 4 years, $50 million, and we were just talking pre-show. That's probably going to come down in my next updates to the free agent projections over at PFF.com. I still think he'll get like 10 mil. Like, I think it's not going to be like some terrible contract. The lack of ball production, I think, has scared some folks off. And I think he's also a guy, he's good at everything. I just don't know if he's great at any one thing. And sometimes in this league and in this sport, there can be an emphasis and a value on, all right, at least we know there's one tool or trait or element of his game or facet of play that we know he can be a difference maker at. And those guys maybe have more outsized value as opposed to guys like, yeah, he's a jack of all trades, a master of none. So yeah, it's not going to be this massive deal, especially as more and more quality safeties hit the market.
Wait, so what did you say? Four for what?
Right now it's 450. It might come down to 440 in the next update.
Okay. So yeah, no, I think that's interesting. I'm going to show you this really quick. I tweeted out a poll earlier, said which of these four Commanders free agents do what you want them to re-sign? And I threw out some, not just the name, but I put on my Spielberger hat and try to guess some contracts. I actually used the one you guys had for Curtis Samuel, two for 17. But for Cam Curl, I went 3 for $31.5 million. And honestly, that may be higher than I actually think it'll go, but whatever. So I tweeted that out, and his father, who is very active on social media, he saw that. Here's the gif he went with.
Okay, love it. Greg Curl. Okay.
It's somebody basically hearing something and then like what spitting up whatever water or something they had in their mouth. So he wasn't happy with that number. And like you said, it may be going lower. Like, I don't, there have been so many additions to the safety room. I don't know if you've even had the time to process where he is, but that's the thing. It's not just what he is as a player, it's the market. There's only so many teams that are going to spend on that position. Last year, right, Jesse Bates got a lot of money from Atlanta, and then like nobody else did at that spot. And there are now a lot of these guys. Now, he's a young player, right? He's not, Justin Simmons is like over 30. So it's a difference of, do you want somebody that you know what they are versus a more of ascending player, but do you have a feel for kind of where he ranks just as a player relative to the other safeties?
Yeah, no, his standing and his ranking, to me at least, hasn't changed. It's just that there are more options, and so it just depresses the overall market. He's still a top five guy at the position in free agency. Winfield, clear number one, not available. I think talent-wise, Xavier McKinney is probably the next guy. There are some questions, not that he's like a bad guy or anything, but kind of called out Wink Martindale this past year with the Giants, which probably didn't go over super well. The year prior, missed some time because of an ATV accident, which, I don't think NFL teams love. And then there's Kyle Duggar, who's a very specific player, a box defender, kind of hybrid linebacker safety type build player. And then I'm forgetting one more, and then it's Curl. Like he is a top five safety available, no doubt about it, in my opinion. But the issue is, in the top 200 that I have, there's probably 20, 25 safeties in there. So that's the bigger issue.
So we talk a lot publicly about the running back market, how that's just gotten so depressed. And another one that'll be interesting this year, now that guys like Saquon Barkley and Derrick Henry are free agents. But it is other positions too, safety, linebacker. Some teams might invest, the Ravens spent a lot of money on Roquan Smith, a year or so ago, and Patrick Queen's probably going to get good money. But in general, those are just not positions where a team says, hey, if we're going to build our roster a certain way, we'll fill in the blank there if we have to, versus going crazy. But I guess we just, as a society, just don't talk about it with the same way that we do with the running backs.
It's true. No, tight end, safety, linebacker. There's six linebackers right now making more than $10 million a year. Safety is probably a similar number. We have a lot of focus in the one spot. I mean, tight end is pretty similar too. It really, really similar market. And it's also a short shelf life position. Guys that, struggle to play well into their late 20s, early 30s. The running back one should have a lot of spotlight. It's just still trending in a strongly downward direction. Even the top guys, that's the difference. Even the top guys are not pushing the market forward. They're getting worse deals than guys signed, 5-10 years ago. But yeah, it's really, we're seeing a shift, I think, in the league perspective of kind of the positional value and like how you allocate your resources. And as quarterback, receiver, edge rusher skyrocket, like there has to be a counterbalance. And unfortunately, those positions are feeling the hurt.
All right, let's still look at a couple other Commanders guys. I don't even want to spend time on Kendall Fuller. Good player. He was very helpful to them the last couple of years on and off the field, steady presence. But he's 29. There's some knee concerns, and this team isn't ready to compete. I just don't see him being brought back, especially if he's going to possibly be getting somewhere in the neighborhood of $10 million a year. I also don't know if I see Curtis Samuel coming back, but at the moment, they would have to replace him. He was effective last year, and maybe with a new offensive system. Like, I could see him being a kind of the guy you would want in a Cliff Kingsbury offense. But, between McLaurin and Dotson, I don't know. It feels like the third guy they may look to get in the draft as opposed to free agency. But what's your view on Curtis Samuel's market? It's not like he put up huge numbers with Washington, but at the same point, he was effective, I think, overall.
Yeah, it's funny. The two players you mentioned, Fuller now is the number one corner probably available. And then with Samuel, receiver market, obviously, we got a couple of franchise tags. You get the Mike Evans extension in Tampa. I have it at 2 years, $16 million, I want to say. Which might even be a bit generous, but only 27, going into a third contract. He did have a good year this year in particular. And I think the versatility is intriguing to a lot of teams. Obviously, he's been kind of a pure slot in Washington, and he hasn't gotten that many, carries. But in Carolina, there were years where he was getting 3-4 carries out of the backfield, and years where he was an out wide 18-yard average at the target downfield threat. So you can use him in a bunch of different ways, and I think that versatility, boosts his value a little bit.
Here's my one shot. I'm pointing my bat to the fences. I'm calling Cornelius Lucas stays with the Commanders. I know that's gonna change your entire PFF ranking, that if Cornelius Lucas could be off the board, but I'm calling that. They have no tackle at all. He's been effective when he plays. I assume they'll draft somebody, but that who knows if that kid's going to play. So I think Lucas stays, even though, again, it's not the same staff, but I'm calling that shot.
You're talking about a Bears legend, Cornelius Lucas here. So that does change everything. That changes my entire perspective on the entire offseason. So yeah, no, I like that idea. Look, I actually had a couple conversations in Indy about the lack of perceived like quality swing tackles, like guys that are clearly you don't want to start, but you're comfortable playing on either side of the line. You know, like there's your George Fants, your you know Josh Jones, who obviously got traded this past year from Arizona to Houston, but like the list gets pretty thin. Cam Fleming in Denver. I think Cornelius Lucas is kind of on that list, so I like that idea. Not just because he's a Bears legend, but he is a Bears legend.
Oh, he's a fun. I don't know if you ever had a chance to like be around him or cover him, but like he's a fun guy. Like he's a beat writers like him, but that's not why I'm saying it. I just solid player, and again, they have if they had to roll it out right now. I mean, don't even tell me no idea who they would start. So I'll go with him. Last one on the Commanders. And this is more of a broader topic, I guess, on quarterbacks, not quarterbacks like Kirk Cousins and Russell Wilson. I guess there's rumors today about Russell Wilson, maybe in the Steelers having some conversations. But it's that next tier down, that spot starter experience backup type. We don't know yet what Washington's plans are in terms of even if we assume they're taking a QB at two. What does that mean for Sam Howell? Sure, I guess he could be the spot starter, but I don't know. That's two kids in the room. You might be able to get some decent value for Howell. So let's just, in my head, I'm like, okay, so if they trade Howell, then what? Do they bring back Jacoby Brissett or somebody like that? And I'm curious what you think of that marketplace. So Brissett in particular, but just like where, because I was talking with a friend of mine at the Combine who was saying he thinks Brissett's going to get like a lot more money than he got last year, which was basically like 1 for 8 because teams are going to realize that they need backups. Now, I think he's wrong, and I told him as much. I don't see him getting much more than what he got a year ago, but you know, we know how this game goes. Some teams will be in a position where like, well, we don't have something, we got to do something. And he's right there on that border. So what's your view of the Brissett market / the other quarterbacks in that spot starter experience backup range?
It's very funny because one of the major storylines of the 2023 NFL season was how valuable or important it was to have a good backup because, 45 guys started games, I think, some crazy number, maybe more than that. But they all feel that way. Like, you talk to, not their agents, but you get a sense of, like, how Gardner Minshew feels, Jacoby Brissett feels, Josh Dobbs feels. I can rattle off a dozen names. It's musical chairs. There's only, 64 or 32 backup jobs available. I have Brissett at 1 year, 6.5. So still right in the range of what he got last year. And I think there is actually a very interesting dynamic where the scenario you just talked about with Sam Howell, I think it applies to picks 1, 2, 3. You have Tyson Bagent would be the hypothetical backup, a second year undrafted free agent. Then have Howell and then, Bailey Zappe, I guess, once they move off of Mac Jones in New England. So I think all three of those teams probably would rather have a veteran to come in and help be a, in the film room and help the guy come along and grow. It's interesting. Yeah, I think it applies to all three of those teams.
I'm fascinated with Washington. They added David Blau to their coaching staff. He literally was just in the NFL last year. He was only on Detroit's practice squad, but he, played with Cliff Kingsbury in Arizona. And part of me wonders, do they bring him in? So if they don't get a veteran, they can at least say, okay, you do it because you just literally have done this for the last couple of years. Is that the way, in other words, keeps Howell, but you still have the guy. I don't know how much that works, but Kingsbury was talking about Blau's ability to cram the playbook and really understand it pretty quickly. So I would, my perfect world, whether they draft Daniels or May at 2, whatever, would be they don't play year one or as little as possible because I think, again, bad team, bad offensive line at the moment, let the kid develop. So you then, but you can't also just have random quarterback out there. You need the locker room to feel like we can compete and win. It's so that's why I think Brissett, again, I'm not saying they come in there, he's the guy and they're going to win the Super Bowl, but at least you would feel like, okay, well, we have a shot. And we'll build from there. So that's why I think it's important to get a guy like that. But we'll see. I did play that game of musical chairs the other day for the story I wrote, like what's going to happen with Sam Howell. And I love doing that. So fun. such a good time. All right, let's get off of them. Let's get to some free agents. If I tell you, pull up your list of 200 dudes and you got to give me one, not, you can pick anywhere you want, but give me like a meaty one. I don't know how, but we'll see. But I think you think Washington may spend a bit. I think others and maybe myself included aren't as sure because they have the money, but I don't know how quickly they're trying to push to win. But that said, they're gonna spend money on somebody, relatively speaking. Who's the guy for you that like, okay, this isn't just going to be one for five, like an actual multi-year deal that's got something to it. Who would be somebody for you that stands out for Washington?
Yeah, I think the big splash, and I guess, look, it's not a massive splash, but to me, is Bryce Huff for the New York Jets, the edge defender, potentially going and being that, quick pressure guy for us. He was not only top five in pass rush win rate the last 2 years, but also if you look at pressures in under 2.5 seconds, still very, very high on that list. He's a perfect fit, for Dan Quinn. He would play well off of the two studs on the interior, and they obviously have very little to speak of at edge right now. So that one makes a ton of sense to me. I think that's probably the bigger splash or higher side move they make. And I have that one at 3 years, $50 million. So that would still, enable them to do a lot more and maybe operate more in the mid-lower tier like others expect. I don't know. I think new owner syndrome and Josh Harris wants to build a stadium and get people excited and maximize the rookie contract that he has, with this quarterback they're going to take it to. I'll be on an island. Maybe I'm wrong. I think they're going to spend a bunch.
I mean, look, they have to field a roster. It's just, so it's a matter of is it the way a fantasy lineup strategy used to play, at times stars and scrubs, spend on some guys who make good money and then fill in the rest with rookie, they have nine draft picks. Maybe they'll end up with more and just re-sign some of the guys they have just to fill it out. Or is it more, flat, like, try to get viable starters across the board, but not necessarily breaking the bank. It's going to be interesting. On Huff specifically, how do you, when you're factoring out a value, like his efficiency is off the charts. It's right there with Myles Garrett and Micah Parsons, I think, for like, win percentage and things like that. But he basically played a complimentary role with the Jets. And I know that was partly because the Jets have had a really good defensive line, but it also does bring into some question, is he an every down player? Is he just more of a specialist? So how did you kind of factor that in?
Yeah, it's definitely complicated and it requires a lot more work. So the big one first was, as you mentioned, always taking the context into account. If Huff was a 400 snap guy on a team that had a bad edge rusher group, it's different than a team that has, or had last year and John Franklin Myers, Jermaine Johnson. They use a top 15 pick on Will McDonald, Carl Lawson in the fold, and he was relegated to be kind of a healthy scratch probably because of Bryce Huff. So like a team that has a ton of talent at that position already. And he's pushing to play and honestly beat out Will McDonald as well. And McDonald's a 23, 24-year-old rookie that could still be a good player, but I'm assuming the Jets probably thought he could play earlier on. And then they did over the course of the second half of the season, you saw more early down usage of Bryce Huff. So it's never a strength of his, or it's not a strength of his. It probably never will be. He's not going to be an 800-plus snap guy. He might be a 650 snap guy. But he's not a total liability. And there's a comp for me, like an example. Like when I watch Josh Uche in New England, who's a very similar bucket, designated pass rusher, would only come in on third downs. Even the Patriots were decimated with injury. They lost Matthew Judon. They lost those guys. They still refused to play Josh Uche on run down. So that's the difference there. And then Huff in the increased role didn't lose the kind of efficiency. But also, it also is why the kind of the database of looking back at other deals was, it was very helpful for me and very huge. I've always done it, but I kind of went more into the weeds there with it this year. And there's like your Pernell McPhees, like your Cameron Wakes. Like we've had some examples. McPhee was my favorite. Carl Lawson kind of profiled similarly too, coming out of Cincinnati, where, yeah, how do teams look at it? How do they approach it? And that's why I don't have some, $20 million per year for Bryce Huff. It's about 3 years, 50 is a good contract, no doubt, but that's less than half of the top of the market, with Nick Bosa now at 34. So it's a projection. And I think I'm probably a little bit high side, but I think it'll be 15 plus.
Who do you think is going to have the biggest contract? Just however you define biggest total money per year. Like, this is not about Washington. I'm just curious, like, overall.
Yeah, if we don't count, I think Chris Jones goes back to Kansas City. I'd be kind of surprised if he doesn't. I know he tweeted an hour ago something that looked like a kind of a subtle message, whatever. Kirk Cousins, we should kind of not count because and Baker because they're
Right.
quarterbacks. To me, Christian Wilkins, I think, is now going to be the big winner of the franchise tags that happened across the league and just how everything played out, him not getting franchise tagged. I think that deal is going to be like 4 years, 100. And if, like you said, other metrics matter. Like I think he'll get 65 plus million in guaranteed dollars. Strong cash flows. Like it's going to be a battle between all these teams to get him signed. So, yeah.
All right. Well, good for him. A year ago, I would have been fascinated to know that because we were in the Daron Payne game. And what would he get? And now, you know, Payne did very well for his contract, and now Wilkins stays the year, plays on the plays out the contract, and now is gonna may had a really good year, but now he's gonna get paid more. Sounds like for sure. All right, couple other things. All right, so you gave us a guy that maybe they can spend on. Logically, they're going to bring in players who have ties to this coaching staff. They just signed Zach Ertz because presumably because he and Cliff Kingsbury were together in Arizona. That's not a splash signing. That's just a signing. But Dallas has a bunch of guys in free agency. Obviously, Dan Quinn just came over from there. They've also a bunch of their free agents are guys on the defensive side. I called my shot on Cornelius Lucas. I kind of almost want to do the same thing with Dante Fowler. He has been with Quinn at the University of Florida and now here again, and a veteran guy who can be a rotation guy off the bench. But Dorrance Armstrong is more of the, you know, bigger move. What's your sense of his market at defensive end and the potential fit here?
I think both of those make sense. I mean, heck, why not do all three? And just build out this edge group. I mean, they do have the five top 100 picks or whatever. So there's optionality there. But I think Dorrance Armstrong, I have him at, I want to say, let's see here, 3 years, and it's like 8.5 a year is what I want to say. Let's see real quick. Good radio here. Yep, that's exactly right. So 3 years, 25.5 mil with 15.5 million in total guaranteed money. You know, look, he's a good player. He is a rotational guy as well. I think he'd stay that way even more so than a Bryce Huff, who maybe, you know, you want him to play more. Armstrong is also kind of I'm not going to say a pure pass rusher. He's more of a level player, a flatter, kind of player than a Huff. But he is also a guy who you want to, bring in obvious passing situations, line him up as a wide nine, and let him get after the quarterback. So, I think Quinn will tap into a lot of those connections. But, yeah, he's about half of what I have for Huff.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, and to be clear, like, we all made fun of Ron Rivera for bringing in everybody he had ever met at Carolina, players and coaches, to join him here. This is part of the deal. I mean, it's just in life. Like, if Brad Spielberger starts Brad Spielberger Inc., he's not going to just completely put up a help wanted sign and pick 10 people he's never met before to help him get this company off the ground. You're going to go with some people that you're familiar with, maybe some people you've known their work, but haven't known as well. But you're going to bring in some people who can help. And also, they can help spread the gospel of whatever it is that you're preaching, whether it's style of play or attitude or what have you. So no issues with it, in reason. Another guy on Dallas, this is the other side of the ball, though. I if Washington drafts a quarterback at 2, they need a center. Now, they drafted Ricky Stromberg last year, but he didn't really play at center and didn't play a ton at all. But you're going to have a rookie quarterback if that guy starts. I don't know if I want essentially two rookies playing center and quarterback. So I kind of like the veteran market. Now, Mitch Morse was one of those guys who just got released by Buffalo. But in terms of Dallas, Tyler, is it Biad? I don't even know how to say the last name. What's the center's last name on Dallas?
Biadish, I think, something like that.
Sure. Okay. So a guy like that, it sounds like he may be made available, and I don't know what Dan Quinn thinks of him, but curious, that's like, what do you kind of have for him? And I don't think you've probably even had a projection for Morse, but what do you kind of make of that interior line market, and whether a guy like Tyler could be a good fit here?
Yeah, it's an extremely deep center class in free agency, even pre-cuts. You know, obviously Mitch Morse is a good player, high floor pass protector, has always been good there, especially now at 33, not the greatest run blocker. I'd be honest, at 3 years, 21, a good deal. He's a very good player, extremely durable. He's played over 1,100 snaps 3 years in a row. Good, another guy who's like good at everything, not really great at anything, but coming out of Wisconsin, he had a ton of responsibility apparently in like calling out protections and is viewed as a very smart, high football IQ player, all those things that you probably want to see in a center. So, yeah, that one would make a lot of sense. Obviously, they draft Stromberg, but you move on from Nick Gates and you kind of want some flexibility there, with Cosme having a good year, but you need additions across this offensive line, and none of them would be a bad idea. So I think he'll get around there, maybe a little bit less than that, just because of maybe there's too many players on the market, but good player, no question. I would like that move as well. It would be a great pairing, I think, with a rookie quarterback, an established guy that knows what he's doing, can take a lot of the responsibility away from that quarterback. I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, if their plans are to play that rookie, like he's the guy this year, I think that's almost to me got to be a more of a priority than the left tackle. Like, not to say that you don't need everything, but like, whatever, you know, the number one goal to me has got to be whatever we can do to help this quarterback, do it. And again, a left tackle is helpful, but like, you know, for all we're just discussing, the signals, you know, the mental aspect of the game, I'd want that person right in front of him who's going to be in constant communication with, to be as helpful as possible. Let's go to some playmakers. That's always fun. Okay, so they have Terry McLaurin. He's got a big contract. Jahan Dotson's here. Disappointing year last year. I'm curious as to what the new staff thinks of why it was disappointing, but let's just say that they're not worried about that. Still need a third guy if Curtis Samuel's gone, but I don't, me personally, like, I think it's either a draft pick or somebody on the cheap. I just don't, if they think the way I do, I'm not investing tons more into that position financially, because it's just, you know, I don't think you get the value back the way you do with some other spots. So I'm looking at some cheaper guys per se. I'm intrigued by Noah Brown, the wide receiver out of Houston. He was, you know, I think he was on my fantasy roster for a week or two last year when some injuries or bye weeks hit, and he had some good moments, but, you know, still a little bit unproven, but he's 6'2". Again, he was productive. I'm sure he's further down on your list, but what do you think of a guy like that? Or is there someone similar to that stands out to you?
I think it's a good one for sure. Obviously, again, a Quinn connection guy, but it goes to Houston this past year. I would agree. I think if you're going to spend on pass catcher, maybe it's tight end, especially after the release of Logan Thomas.
Absolutely.
Noah Brown at 2 years, $7.5 million. I think this past year you saw him, always been a willing run blocker. It can line up in the slot primarily, but also a little bit outside. And this past year he was very good on scramble drills, like really, really good at just getting open late in the shot clock when Stroud was kind of dancing around. I think you saw a trust there and a chemistry there. That's what stuck out to me when I was watching his film for the free agency thing. So that in theory would be a nice pairing with a rookie quarterback that maybe, you know, scrambling around and stuff like that. So I like that idea a lot. I think it would help in the run game as well. And I think it's, again, like high culture character guy you bring in to kind of establish your MO.
And he was, I'm mentioning him as Houston because that's where he was last year. But the years before that, he was in Dallas. So not that, again, other side of the ball and Dan Quinn wasn't there the whole time, but just going to, you know, he at least would have been in the same space with the kid and has a feel for who he is as a person, worker, things like that. So that's a guy I'm intrigued by. What's your market for a guy like Tyler Boyd? Because he would be another one that's got height. Obviously, if the Bengals are keeping T. Higgins, maybe they are, maybe they're not, but then you can't keep him. I always felt he was better than the numbers, but he's, you know, they have a lot of receivers. What's your market for him?
Yeah, I did too, but, and maybe he was injured, so that'll be interesting. But this past year, he looked like a guy that had lost a step. I didn't like what I saw in film from him really at all compared to prior seasons. And yeah, of course, you can say maybe he could have produced more because he had Jamar Chase and T. Higgins as teammates the last, you know, 3-4 years. He's a pure slot. He, again, is a guy that will help you in the run game as a blocker. Almost never drops the ball. I know he has like an infamous drop in the playoffs from a couple of years ago, but really sure-handed. Again, a guy that I think would be a nice value for a rookie. I'm at 2 years, 16, kind of the same, you know, wheelhouse as the Curtis Samuel deal. And I think that might even be generous, but I kind of was hedging, like making sure, like I didn't know, you know, because you never know when guys are hurt and playing through something or not, but he just had like no burst and explosiveness last year compared to what I've seen in years prior.
I'll throw out one more and then I want to turn it over to you, Mark. If we're going to play the game of they worked with this coach before, ergo, that's a thing. What's the market for Marquise Brown with the Cardinals? Because he's not like stylistically necessarily what they need, but he was with Kingsbury there, and I don't get the sense he's going to be like some crazy money, but could still be, you know, pretty productive if they want to add, you know, more of that explosive third receiver. Is that a market for him? Is that a fit, or is that just it? Not really.
It's interesting. I feel like they should try to get a big body in there, but 100%. You know, yeah, but I've been a 1 year flyer for 12 mil. And I think that might even be a little bit generous. We'll see though. I kind of, you know, the draft class is obviously extraordinarily good. He was hurt too much the last couple of years, but when healthy, I still really liked what I saw from him. A good separator, good route runner. Yeah, I think he's squarely in the in that 1 year flyer spot, just because I think in his mind he's probably like, all right, have a better year, stay healthy, and then sign kind of that multi-year bigger deal. So yeah, if they want to go there, I do think it'll be a discount relative to how good of a football player he is. I just wonder if they view it as, you know, a fit overall.
If it's a 1 year deal, then this is probably not the place for him, right? Because even if the rookie quarterback, if that's where it is, does well, it's going to be a lot of ups and downs. And if you're he's trying to get that next deal, like you're saying, yeah, I presume you'd want to go for more of that established set situation. But if they pony up one for 12, then maybe he'd have to do it. Well, let me turn it over to you then. I guess is there you've gone through this list. You knew you were coming on here. I'm sure you thought to yourself, boy, I like this guy for this team, or maybe it's Washington Independent, just boy, this guy I think is great value. Who's a couple of guys for you that you just really like this year?
Yeah, I mentioned tight end. It's not a great class. The only big splash really probably is Noah Fant, with the Seattle Seahawks the last couple of years. Gerald Everett, I think, is a good football player still. A lot of trust from Justin Herbert on third down in the red zone. Forced a ton of missed tackles the last couple of years, whether that was being shifty or just kind of barreling over some people. And then I would like them to get another linebacker, opposite of Jamin Davis. So obviously, Cody Barton's a pending free agent. Who that is, there's a million different options. I don't know if they make a splash like a Patrick Queen. I did put that in an article that's coming out, but that's kind of high side. But there's a lot of options. You get a veteran to pair with him or a younger player. Do you, I don't know, try to get like a Drew Tranquil, a guy that you can bring forward and blitz with, who is also a good coverage player? Do you go for like a Jordan Hicks in Minnesota, more of a veteran guy that I want to say played in Arizona with Cliff at some point? Like, man, it may have been a Vance Joseph hire. But anyway, like, there's a lot of pieces there at linebacker. So those two spots, I think they should do something.
I'm again to butcher this name, Aziz Alshar with
Azeez Al-Shaair, great
the
football
share.
player, big fan. Yeah.
So he was right, an undrafted free agent signed by the 49ers with Adam Peters there. He played for the Titans last year and had a pretty good productive year. What's his market, and is that a guy that could make sense?
Love that one. Yes, and it's a good shout with the Adam Peters connection, because he also just followed Rand Carthon from San Fran to Tennessee last year. So I have met 3 years and 6.75 per. So I don't know what 21 or 20.25 would be the math there. Yeah. So very, very good coming forward again. A guy that you can blitz with, who's so good against the run. He's tenacious. Like he can shed blocks, he can just blow up blocks. I think would be a good pairing again with a Jamin Davis. So yeah, I like that one too for sure.
Is there anybody, when you make these projections, you're trying to figure out the best marketplace you can, but that doesn't mean it's a price you would pay if you were in charge. Is there a guy out there that you're like, oh man, I'm seeing some numbers that I just like, oh boy, this is a mistake ready to happen?
My biggest one this year for that, and yeah, my initial projections are me, and then I try to just, and it's just my opinion. I save it on the back end, and then I just cut. I'm trying to be as accurate as possible. So, and look, I'm not always right. What do I know? But the biggest one for me this year, I don't think he's a bad football player, but I've seen so much buzz about Jonah Jackson, the guard of the Detroit Lions, who, yeah, again, I think he's good. He's a mauler in the run game. I don't like him as a pass protector at all. I think he has his feet are too close together. He gets pushed over or bull rushed. He also sometimes kind of trips himself up. And I've seen a bunch of reports that he's going to get like 12, 15 million a year. I just personally don't see it.
The other guard, so a list that I'm working through here for my next article about possible targets. He's on the list, but so is Tyler Glasgow, their other guard, who's a bit older, but he's been there solid. And of course, the new assistant GM for the Commanders, Lance Newmark, was with Detroit, so he's certainly going to know these guys. What, like, based on how you value the rank the players and your perceived contracts for them, would you rather have Jackson or Glasgow, the older guy, but presumably he's going to be a little bit cheaper?
Yeah, your baseball fandom just leaked in there. You're saying Graham, you said Tyler Glasgow, Graham Glasgow.
Oh, sorry. Yes, sorry.
No,
Sorry,
you're
yes.
good. I knew what you meant, but I was like, oh, that guy's also a professional athlete. Graham Glasgow, very, very good. It was in Denver on a big contract, got cut, goes back to Detroit where he started his career. And yeah, that's a perfect example of how I view these things. And also, where sometimes the rankings, and I probably shouldn't do it this way, but like sometimes when I'm doing it, I have this bias creeps in of, I'm ranking them on how I think the value is going to be. I mean, Jonah's above Graham in these rankings, but I have him at 2 years, 13 million. So about half of what it sounds like Jonah Jackson's going to get. Yes, he's older. He's probably 5, 6 years older. I think they're very similar players as of right now.
All right. Well, I'm gonna factor that into my decision making. Last one, at least for me. So Washington doesn't need running backs per se. They need a change of pace guy to replace Antonio Gibson, who I don't see coming back. But you've got Brian Robinson, you know, as the workhorse. And I don't remember who put this out there. I think it was maybe Matthew Berry. But, like, you know, he was noting, like, James Conner's stats under Kingsbury were, you know, pretty impressive from, like, a fantasy football perspective. And Robinson, therefore, could potentially have that kind of workload. But the market is, like, you know, as we know, running backs are – not paid as much, and there are a lot of guys, you know, like an Austin Eckler is on the list. DeAndre Swift is further down the list. I guess, do you see somebody that makes sense from a value and fit perspective for Washington? Again, they don't need a workhorse per se, but, you know, they do need that guy who can catch passes, change of pace, and, you know, be another option. Is there somebody there that you think kind of makes sense?
Yeah, so I agree. I think B-Rob will be the main guy. There's a million, right? There's so many options. It is, though, a lot of kind of early down guys that I think are going to become available, you know, of ignoring the top of the market players. I don't know, Zach Moss caught the ball pretty well in Indy this past year. I wouldn't say it's like a strength of his game, but he certainly is capable of doing it and was productive. Of course, when Jonathan Taylor was not there, so he can handle a big workload if necessary. He's probably one I'd say. I've met 2 years, 7.5. That might be generous. I tried to be bullish on the running backs just because it's not a good draft class, but you know, I'm probably being too kind, but yeah, he's a name that I think would make sense.
All right. Yeah. I mean that, like, there's too far away realistically to make that move, but it's just like, man, if you can get a productive running back like this for, like, pretty cheap. I mean, it's not not getting paid is not a function of them not being good. It's just a matter of that you can find running backs easier and you know, not a long shelf life, blah blah blah. But if we're only talking like a year, then that's something to consider. All right, well, look, as always, you've been great. Do I need anything I didn't ask you? Any big thoughts on your that big brain of yours that you want to throw out there, whether it's Commanders or otherwise?
I think we covered a lot of things. I am curious what they do in the secondary. Obviously, you're hoping to see growth from Forbes and Quan Martin, but you know, again, I assume not a big splash, but Quinn's got a bunch of connections, the guys there too. You know, Jayron Kearse, the safety from Dallas, who's kind of like a hybrid type of player, is a pending free agent. In the slot, Jordan Lewis is a pending free agent. I think I may have connected him to Washington in some article too. Really good run defender, bit of an issue in coverage, but I don't know. I think they probably prioritize up front because I think both guys, you know, Dan Quinn and Peters are used to organizations that do that, but I wonder if they try to pick their spots and maybe add some secondary help as well.
All right. He is on Twitter at @PFF_Brad. Does some work for Over the Cap as well, as I know, because I constantly pester him for, wait, why is this showing this or that? Commanders do have a lot of money, so I'm sure that'll be fun. As Brad said, he thinks he's going to spend it. You know, he's a good read. He knows his shit. And, you should follow him and read his stuff. Anything you got coming out that we need to know about?
I appreciate it. Yeah. So I've been referencing it. We did a landing spot series. We're going to just do the full top. We did it by position. We're not going to release the full top 100. And then no, otherwise I will be, you know, locked in a basement preparing for next Monday through Wednesday.
You the man. Appreciate the time as always. Good luck. Next week, because it is going to be fast and furious, and this is where, you know, you are going to be relied on heavily by your work people to tell everybody quickly if this team made a good or crappy signing, and look forward to reading your stuff. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
All right, big thanks to Brad Spielberger for his time. Thanks to everyone here for checking out the podcast, checking out The Athletic. Definitely means a lot, and I definitely appreciate it, and we are going to be crazy busy. I would imagine here for the next little bit, free agency starting, they still have the number 2 pick, a lot of moving parts, and we'll start to get a feel for what the Commanders are looking to do with this roster. But that's it for now. Ben Standick signing off. Until next time. See ya.